replaced the pickup coil with the coil capacitor. And my question is, the coil capacitor is made from, say, a few meters of the thin aluminium foil, 3 inches wide, is like a ribbon, insulated in between themselves. I'm wondering how that coil differs from the regular coil just because of having a higher increased capacity. Also, my second question is, the major difference is or is not comparing to regular coil is because we have a pancake-like coil that has a capacitive character which would stand for the higher voltage and so when we have a capacitive character of the coil, we have a higher voltage. Now, if you compare that to antenna, I remember when I was young, when I touched the antenna and somebody was transmitting, I felt the shock. But in some other antennas that I was dealing with, I didn't have that that feeling. If you could comment on that. Back to you, sir.
I know that you said that you just sent me something. Oh, it just arrived. Up till now, up until a few seconds ago, I didn't see your new material. It just arrived. Let me take a quick look at it.
Yeah, you see the first picture on it. Those are the components of the device that we also investigated. We had about 3 watts of power delivered. There was I would say 3 watts of the consumption for the device. We had a 100 watts light bulb connected to the pickup coil. Now, if you look at the first picture, you see 2 ferrites. Then you see the carousels, then you see the pickup coil on that picture. And then you see on the next picture, you see the schematic. I can explain that further. And then on the third picture, you see there's just a pickup coil. Now what we did is we placed pickup coil with this coil capacitor. And I'm trying to understand the properties or differences between a coil capacitor or regular coil. The coil capacitor is the pancake one, and it's 3 inches wide. A regular coil is from the regular wire. I'm trying to understand a capacitive character of the coil that should deliver a high voltage, and the inductive one. Now I'm trying to understand the difference between the antennas that have a capacitive character or they have a inductive character. Back to you, sir.
Question for Wes while you're busy, Dick, if possible.
Go ahead, John.
Wesley, in that crayon drawing there, that schematic, is that capacitive coil at right angles to the ribbon coil?
No, no. The ribbon is the coil capacitor. 2 ribbons of foil, 3 inches wide. Let's say a few meters long, wind it as a pancake. Now, on the right-hand side of the carousels, which you see on the drawing, the crayon drawing, you see a vertical rectangle. This is the representation of the carousels, of the capacitive coil. Now, you see 2 leads from the top, which they have 1 light bulb connected into it. This is 1 winding from that capacitive coil. And then on the bottom, you see a little bit more strange connection to the other light bulb. In the experiment that I have sent you the video for, you've seen 1 light bulb that was barely leading and the other one in full brightness. Back to you, John.
Okay, Weston, I take it the foil is shown laid out flat, but that's really wrapped around the ribbon coil?
No, we found a very interesting factor. If you look at the right-hand side of the drawing, just to the very, very right-hand side in the middle, you see something that looks like a pancake coil. This is the representation of that coil capacitor. Now, we took a connection from in the middle of that pancake coil and from the outside of the pancake coil. Basically, the pancake coil has a hole inside, so we are able to slide it on the carousels. Now, when you look at the down the bottom of this vertical rectangle, on the right-hand side, you see one end, and it says number two. That's the coil number two from the capacitive coil. Two ribbons divided by the piece of the insulation. From one side, that light bulb is connected to number two coil, one only, one and only, and then from the other side is connected to flat piece of the foil from the bottom of the carousels. Now here's the point. The carousels has a peaks and valleys. If you look at the picture on the top, you see the carousels winding, and you can explain that to the people who are interested with it, how it looks like. Now, when we tried that experiment without the ferrite, they didn't work. We put a extremely small and thin ferrite rod inside that was exactly places between two peaks that would be two cross sections marked as a point in the horizontal carousels. Let me jump.
Okay, Wes, you're going too far. I just want to continue with the simple question I have.
Please.
Okay, so what you've done, you've made a capacitor. You have two 3-inch wide strips of aluminum foil separated by a dielectric. Okay, then you wound that up, leaving a hole in the center, the diameter of the carousel coil that you're calling it, and that slips over that. And then you tune it by sliding it up and down. Is that what you're doing?
That's correct. We position that vertical rectangle, which represents the capacitive coil, right in the middle of two peaks of the carousel. If you look at the horizontal carousel, you see two points in the middle. Those are the cross sections of the windings. Then, after we did that, we put a piece of ferrite that was exactly ends of that ferrite were between the peaks of the carousel, inside that carousel. What happens is I created a theory of the switching domain relay with memory. What is happening is when the peak shows up on one cross section of the carousel, then that's the point where the domains in the ferrite start to switch. Before those domains are able to switch to the other end of that ferrite, that is on the other peak of the carousel, we've got another impulse. Now what is happening, that impulse is simply memorized by that ferrite and is repeated, so it's like self-adjusting device reacting to the changes of the spark. So then at the bottom of that drawing, you see something that looks like a U-shape. That's the representation of that slide of the aluminium foil that is connected to the light bulb at the bottom of the carousel. Do you follow me so far, John?
Yes, I do, Wes. So at the point on the carousel coil where they cross at 90 degrees, that's probably where you're getting your best coupling. All right. So now I basically understand, because this drawing is very difficult to discern what's going on there. Okay, let me hand it back to Dick before we get lost here. Dick, back to you, sir.
Now, before that, John, try to understand that ferrite is directly inside the carousel, and in the and the capacitive coil is in the middle of the ferrite. Now, whatever the switches of the domains in the ferrite happened, those domains supposed to somehow interact with that capacitive coil. I'm trying to understand what is going on there. On the video, it clearly shows the light bulb from the top was barely leading. The light bulb from the bottom was leading in full brightness. Dick, back to you.
The microwave people, when they build things like the ceramic capacitors, similar to the ones by, ATC, American Technical Ceramics builds microwave ceramic capacitors, multiple plates, and they've got to be very careful on how they connect each one of the plates on the right-hand side, that are the, let's call them the positive plates, and on the left-hand side, the negative plates are all connected to a vertical wall of conducting material, so that each individual plate has its separate connection to the vertical wall on the right and the vertical wall on the left, which are really the contact pads. You got to be very careful how you use these capacitors, and some guys will set them up on end, sideways, as opposed to laying them flat in order to get lower inductance. Now, on the right-hand side of the schematic diagram you just sent us, let me drop. I see a coiled-up foil with a number one and a number two. I'm assuming there are two sheets of foil material with dielectric in between, and they're wound up with a hole in the center which isn't shown. And when people have built capacitors like that at significant RF frequencies, they don't just make contact to foil number one or foil number two at one single location. They usually set it up in order to not end up with stray distributed inductance within the winding of the capacitor, which...
We have had a connection from both sides of the coil, number one and number two, on the right-hand side, pancake coil shown. There has to be a hole big enough to fit the carousels inside. So, number one is one end of the ribbon, and number one from the outside would be the outside one. Number two, this inside, and number two outside. That's what you see also on the vertical rectangle representing the capacitive coil. Number one is placed on the top for, to both of the ends of that ribbon. And number two at the bottom. Back to you.
Yeah, I'm going to still try to complete that thought. In order to not end up with stray inductance within the winding of the capacitor at reasonable RF frequencies, like a couple of megacycles and above, people who have wound capacitors in this manner were forced to do the following. Sheet number one and sheet number two get horizontally displaced. In other words, sheet number one is displaced a little bit to the left, and then you lay down a layer of dielectric material, and you lay sheet number two slightly displaced to the right, and then you roll the coil of the capacitor from top to bottom. Maybe there's another layer of dielectric, but you know what I mean. And now all of the individual windings of sheet number one are all completely exposed on the left side of the roll. All of the windings of sheet number two are completely exposed on the right-hand side of the coil. Then they dunk all of the left-hand side into a vat of solder, all of the right-hand side into a vat of solder, and now you're making contact to each one of the layers of the coil through each one of the wraps, if you know what I mean, and you end up with a capacitor of low inductance.
That's a beautiful idea, Dick.
That's the way it's done. When you do it with less than that amount of contact that I just described, and you operate the capacitor, and this is a kind of an electrolytic capacitor, when you then operate it at an RF frequency, you end up with a peculiar distribution of inductance and capacitance within the capacitor. And if you wanted that kind of a complicated circuit, yes. But if you wanted a pure capacitor, you wouldn't do it that way. You make sure that every one of the turns of sheet number one are all exposed on the left-hand side, and you can solder them all to one sheet on the left-hand side and make that the number one contact, so to speak, without simultaneously shorting to any of the sheets that are displaced on the right-hand side. I think you see the principle. So the way this capacitor is shown, to some degree, it has distributed inductance and distributed capacitance, which maybe is good, but it's making life more complicated when it comes to analyzing what kind of a capacitor that is.
I've specially made it for the purpose to have cell inductance and cell capacitor in it. If you look at the right-hand side, you see two coils marked 1, 1, 2, 2, like a transformer. It's a small, very small drawing. This capacitor coil, and next to that, to the right, you see that there's two coils. This is a representation of what we were trying to achieve.
But let me try to finish the first thought. When you connect all of the turns of sheet number one on the left side by one great big soldering operation, and all of the turns of sheet number two on the right side by a soldering operation to a flat plate of conductor, and then you take the left-hand sheet, call it lead number one, and the right-hand sheet, call it lead number two, and then you put the capacitor on an RCL meter or a network analyzer or whatever, and at some particular frequency, you measure the capacitance in picofarads, microfarads, whatever you like, at that frequency. Then when you sweep in frequency and you measure the capacitive reactance versus frequency, it should follow the law of capacitive reactance equals 1 over 2 pi FC. Then you know you've got a cure capacitor. If it follows that law, when you plot the capacitive reactance versus frequency, let me drop. When you plot the capacitive reactance versus frequency on an XY graph paper, the capacitive reactance should fall off as a straight line. I think that's on semi-log paper, or is it linear paper? I'm not sure which, but we'll soon figure that out. I think it's on semi-log paper. On semi-log paper, the capacitive reactance versus frequency should be, let's say, a 45-degree slanted line, less capacitive reactance at higher frequency. When you make that plot of capacitive reactance versus frequency, and if it follows that equation, then you know you've got a fairly pure capacitor. But if you don't connect all of sheet number one, all of its turns, in the way that I described, if you just connect the foil here and there periodically, you will end up with a capacitor that has some distributed inductance. Let me drop. And now when you sweep that capacitive reactance versus frequency and plot it, you're going to get a curve that's got some funny squiggles to it. And now you know you don't have a pure capacitor. Now, for what you're seeking to do, that might be good, but when it comes to analyzing what's happening, you'd like to know, is your capacitor acting like a capacitor, or at this frequency, is your capacitor acting like an inductor? To give you one more example, even if you follow this method of construction, there is something peculiar about a tantalum capacitor that most tantalum capacitors, usually they're, 1 microfarad or something like that at 35 volts, when you take a tantalum capacitor and use it above 1 megacycle, it acts like an inductor. In that case, there's something funny going on with the chemistry of tantalum. But in this particular case of this foil capacitor, It'd be awful nice to know, is that a capacitor that follows the right curve when you sweep it in frequency and measure capacitor reactance? I recommend you do that if you want to have a little more understanding of what might be taking place. N2XJM, K2RIW in the TechNet.
So what I was trying to achieve is still have a coil that would interact with the carousels, inductive by inductive coupling, and increase the capacitance of that coil. So what we did is we took connection from the inner side of that coil and outer side of the coil, the capacitor coil. We specially placed that capacitive coil in the two peaks, in between the two peaks of the carousel. We placed the ferrite, that ends of that ferrite were on the peaks of the carousel. So we have the peaks and valleys in the cross sections. You see that on that horizontal carousel. Now, on the left-hand side of the carousel, you see two ends of the carousel and the variable capacitor in between them. When you go more to the left, you see two diodes, one left, one right, the capacitor in between them, and connected only one side to the carousel. What I forgot to put there, there was one spar gap between the upper end of the carousel and this structure with the two diodes and the capacitor. The other spark gap supposed to be the spark gap that was between the horizontal strip that was placed underneath of the carousel. The strip had the diameter 1/4 of the diameter of the carousel in width and the length between two peaks of the carousel. And that's why we've got this effect. It was just burning.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Sorry about it. The whole theory of it was that when we placed the ferrite, end of the ferrite was on the left-hand side, nearby the peak, then when we had a peak of it there, it starts to switch domain. When the peak shows up on the other, on the right-hand side, the cross-section of the carousel, then we had the reverse action of the ferrite with the switching domain. For some reason, the device did not work with the ferrite, and we could put a huge ferrite in it, or we could put a small ferrite in it, and we've got an effect. Back to you.
At the beginning of your last transmission, someone else tried to sign in with the call letters of N2L something. Who was that person? Give me your full set of call letters and your name. K2RIW. My name is Vic.
Yes, N2LDY.
Okay, your signal is fading out periodically, but I think I heard N2LDY. Lima, Delta, Yankee. What is your name, sir, and do you have a question?
Actually, I went outside with the on the HT. The name is Dawn, Delta Oscar November, and I did have a question. Earlier, you said something about 100 watts light bulb and 3 watts, and I had a question about I guess filaments of the light bulb. And what the difference might be if instead of the 100-watt light bulb with 3 watts into it, if you had like a 5-watt light bulb with the 3 watts into it, the resistance in the filament and what that would do to some of the readings that you might get. And also, some filaments in incandescent light bulbs, you know, are coiled around in specific points, and others, you know, you might have just like a straight little line of
coming in from the Eastern machine on 147.375, and your particular handy-talkie, as you move around, goes into peaks and valleys of fade. So I'm only getting half of your words. I know you're asking a question about tungsten filaments of light bulbs. I can tell that's the question, and maybe I'm going to be able to hear you easier if I listen to the input frequency, although that's off the back of my Yagi. My Yagi is aimed to the west right now, and I can't move it.
That's got a question.
Dick said 375 is down. We should let it reset.
Let me go to a different antenna.
Okay, Don, we'll let you go to another antenna.
I had a question what he was asking for.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wait until he finds that other antenna or finds a way to getting through one of those machines. I wish I had a chance to listen to him on the 147.975 input frequency. Maybe I would have been able to hear him directly because only half of his words are coming through with those fades, and he may not realize that moving your handy-talkie around so you get a good, strong signal on the output doesn't put you in the right position for a strong signal on the input, because the input frequency and the output frequency are not the same. He may have fallen into that trap.
Now, I have a question for you. What do you think, Dick, is the role of the horizontal strip of aluminium? The horizontal casusay, right underneath, you have a piece of aluminium at the barrel that is put in between the capacitive coil and carousels. Now, the representation of how that strip looks like is that the barrel on the right-hand side, very barrel, says aluminium foil plate. This one is one-fourth of the diameter of the carousel, and it's in length between the cross-to-cross of the carousel. What do you think is the function of that piece of foil?
Okay, I'm going to be very frank with you, Wes. I'm reasonably sure that John and I, although we've received a schematic diagram, only have partial understanding of what it's saying. I see a coiled-up capacitor on the right-hand side. On the lower right-hand corner, I see a piece of aluminum foil plate, which I think is going to become part of a capacitor.
That plate is, when you look at the horizontal carousel, and you look at the vertical coil capacitor, that plate is represented at the bottom of the carousel, connected in one hand, side to the light bulb at the bottom. Do you see that?
I see light bulb number one.
The light bulb number one, right. It's on the upper leg of it, is connected to that particular three strip. Now, I made another representation of how this strip looks like at the bottom of the picture. Now, that strip is placed exactly between two peaks of the carousel. If you look at the middle of the horizontal carousel, you see two points, one on the right-hand side, one on the left-hand side of the capacitor coil. Those are the peaks or cross-sections of the carousel. Now, what we find out is when we place that plate exactly between those two points, and we place the ferrite exactly between 2 points inside of the carousel. We have a working model. Back to you.
Let me see if John can explain it to me. KC2WGB, K2RIW. Go ahead, John.
I think I'll give it a try. That lower right-hand semi-cylinder of aluminum foil is actually what slipped between the large capacitor that he rolled up with a diameter the same as that Caduceus coil that he has. That goes on the Caduceus coil first, and then that capacitor is slid over. And the representation is wrong because it looks like it's as long as that coil, but it can't be, because it has to be centered where the crossover of the ribbon winding is on this Caduceus coil. So I'm imagining it's 3 or 4 inches in width. It looks very confusing. Now, that is represented by the light bulb connection that travels up and then to the left, and it looks like a little bar magnet at right angles to the capacitive coil.
What I'm trying to understand is how the magnetic electromagnetic field travels in the carousel. How then this strip of the aluminum foil that is slipped at the bottom of the carousel between the coil capacitor and carousel is getting the induction of the voltage. As you see, it is not connected on the left-hand side. It is connected only to the right-hand side to the light bulb.
Is there any way of seeing a photograph of this apparatus? Because it's very easy for a person to have the real thing in front of them or a photograph of it. Then he makes a simplified or oversimplified stick figure diagram of it, and because the real object is already in his brain, the diagram makes some sense. But to a person hit cold with just the diagram, I've got more questions than I can possibly even ask as to what the diagram is trying to show.
I'm going to prepare the set of the information in accurate professional manner, and I'm going to send it to you, but could you explain to us how the electromagnetic field of the carousel is spread around?
I think the answer right now is no. Could I? And I think the answer is no. By the way it's spelled, it could be pronounced Caduceus. Is it pronounced Caduceus? That's the way it's spelled. Or is it pronounced Caduceus?
I don't know, Dick. It's the first time I've heard this expression. I thought it was catasail.
Did we Google for it? I never Google for it.
Yeah, on this diagram, let it drop. On this diagram, it's spelled C-A-D-U-C-E-U-S. Many people would pronounce that Caduceus.
Now, if you Google Caduceus coil, in the Google, you see plenty of the information about it, pictures, and I'm trying to find out the Wikipedia, yes. But on Wikipedia we have a bifilar coil. PDF want on the Caduceus coil. Maybe you are more lucky than me.
That's a French derivative.
Ancient Greek.
There is a symbol that's used by physicians, which is spelled that way. It's pronounced Caduceus. It looks like two intertwined snakes. And I think that's a derivative from the fact that the snake oil or snake products or whatever in the very early days of medicine were used by physicians. So maybe that's the origin. But Caduceus is the way the physicians pronounce the word, which looks like two intertwined snakes, and it's the symbol, the ancient symbol of medicine.
Caduceus is the ancient Greek, I was right. For medical samples, right?
Yeah, the entwined serpents, that's right, and that's the medical staff.
And this thing does have the dotted lines that go from left to right on that diagram do look like two intertwined snakes. And that's some of the outer wrapping of this coil, and maybe that's why the caduceus was used to describe this thing. And how it's pronounced, we're not quite sure, but that the physician symbol of intertwined snakes is the word being used for this coil, this complicated structure, which is a bunch of coils of various kinds, usually wrapped on a ferrite coil form of some form. Is that approximately true, Wes? Go ahead.
I'm in.
Okay, the carousel is sometimes mistakenly used as a symbol of medicine or medicine practice, especially in North America, because of widespread confusion with the traditional medical symbol. The root of Asileptus, which has only single snake and no wings. I'm reading right now from Wikipedia. Carousels. Pretty interesting material with a lot of evidence for it. Back to you, Dick, and then there is a comment.
Yeah, somebody said comment. Would you give us your call letters and your name, sir, and then your comment?
Yes, this is Tim, N2RDB. Asclepius was it translates into English, man instructing snake. The only man instructing snake I ever heard of was in the Garden of Eden. Anyway, N2RDB, back to net. But yes, the caduceus was the double snake.
I wonder, do we say it properly caduceus? That's what we're supposed to say?
Yes.
Okay, so I was using the ancient Greek. Caduceus, thank you very much for education, Dick.
Tim, are you fairly sure the word is pronounced caduceus? That's the way I've heard physicians in the past pronounce it to me.
I've heard physicians pronounce it the same way, N2RDB.
Okay, that's the word of Tim from Mineola. Okay, out of curiosity, you work with physicians or you have a medical background, Tim?
I have had to make use of their services on occasion, and I did ask about it since I do a lot of reading, especially I've actually read a treatise called The Doctrine of Signatures, obviously a translation into English, and you know, various other medical references and herbology textbooks and whatnot. It's an interest of mine.
I found something. William Hayes' word, 1910, discovered a symbol similar to the classical caduceus, sometimes appears on Mesopotamian cylinder seals. The symbol is 3000 to 4000 BCE old. Back to you.
Now, on that diagram, Wes, on the right-hand side where the word caduceus is written out, just to the upper left of the coiled capacitor, and there's an arrow aiming to the left, I see dotted lines which look like they're wrapping around that caduceus.
Correct.
And those dotted lines, are they on the far left-hand side connected to those two foils coming out of the caduceus that have a capacitor, a tuning capacitor across them? Is that where the two wires are connected? Those two dotted wires, go ahead.
That is correct.
Okay, those two dotted wires wrap around the caduceus like the snakes of the symbol, and in two spots there are two distinct dots.
That's correct. This is the representation of the peaks for the cross sections What we did is we placed a ferrite inside that caduceus to make sure that the two ends of the ferrite are exactly at the point of the cross section. We placed that horizontal strip of the foil, which looks like a U shape, 1/4 of the diameter of the caduceus, and the length between these two distinctive dots. That's how we got this effect. Now, that piece of foil is connected only one side to the light bulb, and the other side of the light bulb is connected to winding number 2 from the capacitive coil.
Wes, each time I try to ask a question, you jump 4 steps ahead and you lose me.
I'm sorry.
The question I was asking is, those crisscross dotted wires, where the wires crisscross, there is a dot. You're telling me the dot represents a position where some form of effect is maximized. A dot like that usually indicates the two crisscross wires are soldered together at that location. Is this dot, in that case, not indicating the wires are soldered together at that location? Is that a misuse of that particular symbol over the U.S.?
Yes, there is a misuse of this particular symbol, and the reason for that was that I was trying to point the vital points in which we get the maximum of peaks.
Okay, when you say maximum peaks, is it the trigger coil that's being slid along the caduceus, and when the trigger coil is over dot number 1 or dot number 2, is that where you're seeing the maximum effect? Is that what that is saying?
No, when you just connect the 16.8 kilohertz to the end of the caduceus from the left-hand side, then you can observe that the maximum of the energy that you're getting is where those two snakes cross each other. And on the picture that you have on the top, we have a sample of the caduceus that we winded. That was the first picture, the yellow one. But this didn't work. That was done exactly to the theory. Didn't work. We have our caduceus that has more cross sections in it. Let me drop. And we positioned this coin capacitor, that is a vertical rectangle, right in the middle of those peaks. We positioned that horizontal piece of foil at the bottom, exactly between the two peaks, and we put the ferrite rod, very small, very thin one, in the middle, exactly between these two peaks. And we've got the effect desired. And it's shown on that video.
Okay, I'm going to have to see that video later. In the upper left-hand corner of that schematic diagram, it says, look at cross-section, cross-hatch C. Look at cross-hatch C. What does that mean? Because nothing else on that page has something called cross-hatch C.
Well, I sent you that particular diagram only a minute before we start the subject. Actually, we were in the middle. And there is another piece of paper that shows exactly what's going on with these two diodes. You see two diodes. One is the reverse, and then you see the capacitor. Now you see one connection that goes directly to one leg of the caduceus. Then, basically, these two diodes with the capacitor are put in the square. This is just the black diagram of what's going on over there. But definitely, there are two diodes and a capacitor over there. The only difference is that wire that goes from that block to one leg of the caduceus is supposed to be spark up in the middle. and another spark up supposed to be on the right hand side where the lower light bulb is connected to that horizontal strip. We have two spark ups. I thought that you could see that video. It was, everything was done in Russia. I wanted to make sure that you get at least any information for me to start the subject. We can always finish that later time. I wonder if you remember, Dick, when I told you that I can have a capacitor that is connected with one wire, charged with the one wire. I could have two diodes in reverse, one capacitor in between them, and the light bulb connected to them is going to lead. That was a few months ago when I showed this kind of experiment, when you said, now this is the fluorescent light bulb or something like that. This is a similar concept to that. Well, I'm trying to find out how the caduceus, did I say it properly, how the caduceus spread the electromagnetic field, how it works, and to exist.
Jake, point of order.
You got it, John.
Dick, back to Wesley's original question. Lamp number one is lighting. Obviously, we have a difference of potential there. I think it's the capacitor, the capacitance effect, that's given him that light. And it is a very dim light. He says the upper bulb, which is connected across the two plates of the capacitor, is very bright. So I think maybe he's looking for the answer why that number one bulb is lighting to begin with.
If you look at the flux of magnetic field, this is the coil and it's the capacitor. I'm talking about rectangular capacitive coil. And then you look at the horizontal carousel. I'm trying to visualize how the E field and B field looks like.
Yeah, the so-called capacitor is beginning to look like it is a very complicated structure. It's not a capacitor in the normal sense. When I look at the upper right-hand corner of that picture, I see light bulb number two. Light bulb number two is connected between crosshatch number one and crosshatch number one, the two strips of foil coming out of, I guess, sheet number one.
Correct.
And sheet number two at the bottom has two strips coming out.
Correct.
If that was a pure capacitor, and there was no distributed inductance in that capacitor, crosshatch number one and crosshatch number one would have to always have 0 volts across.
If the light bulb was dim, just dim, but the light bulb on the bottom was...
part of that picture, John, where it says crosshatch number one and crosshatch number one and light bulb number two across them. Are those two wide foil leads both coming from sheet number one of that capacitor? What do you think, John?
No, I don't. I think he has two of them labeled with the same numbers, because one and one would be the bulb connected across the same sheet, and that's not what he has. Number one, the lead of the inner sheet is lead number one, comes out as number two. Sheet number two is lead in one and comes out as number two. So that's how that's laid out, I believe.
No, John, it's quite opposite. One and one is one sheet, two and two is one sheet. One and one has the light bulb that is barely leading. Two and two has the light bulb that is in full brightness. What is strange that the light bulb is connected two and two is connected only to the horizontal strip, and the strip is connected nowhere. Nowhere at all.
Yeah, also look at the schematic diagram to the upper right. The schematic diagram looks like a transformer, winding number one and winding number two. I think that really is foil number one and foil number two with the windings of those foils. So it appears as though the one and one is the exact same sheet and light bulb number two is across that. Do you see that possible interpretation, John? Wait for the four beeps. I didn't.
Yes, Dick, I thought it was a mistake, but, you know, I stand corrected, because I don't really... That makes it even worse to understand what's going on here.
It's becoming more and more obvious that the so-called capacitor is far, far from a pure, ordinary capacitor. It is a kind of distributed capacitor with a significant amount of inductance within the way the capacitor is being wound and terminated and used. And so it would be very interesting to take whatever leads you like of this capacitor and sweep their impedance, it's going to be reactance, resistance, whatever, sweep the impedance of those two leads versus frequency. It would be a double proof that this is far from a simple capacitor. Now, maybe that's desirable. Maybe that's part of the operation of this rather complicated circuit. But we can no longer call that a capacitor. It's a capacitor-like thing in the method by which it was constructed, but the construction was not done in a conventional manner to make it into a quasi-pure capacitor.
This is a Tesla concept that was published and was patented by Tesla.
What did he call that capacitor-like thing? What did Tesla call it, Wes?
I'm not for sure. I've seen it. It looks like he called it coil with capacitance.
Okay, so maybe he considers it more of a coil, more of an inductor. See, every coil, no matter how you wind it, is going to have some distributed capacitance between the turns, or if there's multiple layers, there's going to be capacitance between the multiple layers. There's going to be a certain amount of straight capacitance from the input lead to the output lead of a single turn coil, of a single coil, and so on. So every coil has got distributed capacitance. And here he has made this thing in such a way that the capacitance is very much emphasized, as well as some inductance, so it's a very complicated thing.
Q, how would you sweep that? I mean, how would you make it? That means I'm sweeping it without high voltage, of course.
Another question when you have time, Dick.
Yeah, if I took a disc ceramic capacitor, for instance, or if I took a glass, if I took some kind of a reasonably pure capacitor that's operational at, let's say, 1,000 megacycles and lower. There are various kinds of capacitors I can get a hold of. Or maybe I'll be more careful. 100 megacycles or lower. I got a box full of capacitors with axial leads, and if I put them on a capacitance measuring RLC meter, the meter will put a sinusoidal voltage of the desired frequency across the capacitor. And if I, with a RF choke and a separate power supply, was able to change the DC voltage on the capacitor while it's on this capacitance measuring meter, ordinary ceramic and glass and typical type non-electrolytic capacitors, let me drop. Ordinary non-electrolytic capacitors would show a property where the amount of capacitance does not change when I change the DC voltage across the capacitor. Up to the point where the capacitor starts arcing over, there's no change in capacitance versus DC voltage for a conventional RF qualified capacitor.
Can I do it this way? Connect the generator, sweep generator, to the, how to say, leave that capacitive coil intact and connect to 1 and 2 spectrum analyzer.
Now, I'm going to try to complete that thought. So, ordinary capacitors that have a dielectric of mylar, Teflon, the usual AC dielectric materials for a radio-type capacitor. They are not DC voltage sensitive. If now I decide to make the capacitor in the electrolytic manner, which means I'm using as a dielectric more complicated chemistry, the more complicated chemistry and a forming procedure takes place where the capacitor now has a positive lead and a negative lead, and you do not reverse the voltage on those capacitors. Maybe it's a electrolytic capacitor intended for power supply operation. Now, that particular capacitor might change capacitance as I change the DC voltage on it. It's a function of what I use for the dielectric and the way the individual plates become etched in the capacitor forming process. Capacitor forming of an electrolytic process is an electronic process. You put a certain amount of DC voltage of the right polarity on the capacitor for a certain length of time, and some form of etching process takes place on the positive plate and the negative plate, and some kind of change takes place in the chemistry. An electrolytic capacitor will probably change capacitance as a function of DC voltage, and all hell breaks loose if you reverse the polarity of the DC voltage on electrolytic capacitor. It might even explode. So DC voltage on capacitors. Let me drop. Depending on what the dielectric chemistry is, becomes a very complicated capacitor of microfarads versus DC voltage. Now, this particular foil-wound capacitor was the dielectric material, a sheet of something that is passive, like Teflon, paper, mylar, polystyrene. Was that the dielectric material, or was the dielectric material some kind of fluid chemistry, which is what you have in an electrolytic seal on the end of it, so that the fluid inside doesn't evaporate? If it dries out, you lose a lot of the microfarad. So, in your opinion, was this an electrolytic capacitor, fancy chemistry fluids, or was this a non-polarized capacitor using passive materials like Teflon, nylon, mylar, glass, and so on? So what kind of a capacitor, what do you believe was the dielectric material on this capacitor? Very important, Wes. N2XJN, K2RIW.
On the picture number 3, you see a regular roll of the clear tape that is used for wrapping the packages. Look at the picture number 3, you see the pickup coil, and on the left-hand side, you see that what we use as the insulation between two sheets of aluminium.
You said picture number 3. Picture number 3 is the schematic diagram, so I'm a little confused.
This is the last picture. You have three pictures. One is up, one is the schematic diagram, and go lower. Go lower. You see the pickup coil and the tape on the left hand side?
With scotch tape, it looks like, Dick.
Okay. Of the three things you mailed me is 001 JPEG, 002 JPEG, and schematic. Do I look at 001 or 002 JPEG?
001 JPG. JPEG.
Okay. I see a looks like a 50-turn coil wrapped on a white cylinder with pieces of blue tape. In the upper left-hand corner, I see what looks like a roll of clear scotch tape that's used for mailing packages. Is that the picture you're talking about? Go ahead.
Right, and this is the kind of insulation now that rolls. It's one of the pickup coil. We had two ways of constructing the device. One was with the pickup coil that you see on the picture, and the other one was with the capacitive coil. So we're discussing right now capacitive coil, but you see that roll of the scotch tape that is used for the packages that we use for the insulation between these two sheets of aluminium.
So if I understand correctly, you start off with two sheets of aluminum. On at least one of them, you spread this Scotch tape, and the Scotch tape is wider than the aluminum, so the